This is NHL Radio.
Time now for NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Home Ice.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the NHL Hour. I'm Gary Bettman, and alongside me is Bill Clement, and we're live from the NHL store powered by Reebok on 6th Avenue in Manhattan, New York. And we're coming to you on XM Home Ice. That's XM 204, Sirius 208, and NHL.com. The call-in number is 1-877-NHL on XM. That's 1-877-645-6696. We'll take your calls. Bill and I will chat. And we're going to be joined. What are you laughing at? And we're going to be joined later by Peter Chiarelli, the general manager of the surging Boston Bruins. And it was nice to be introduced by Bruce Springsteen. He had a good week. His appearance at the Super Bowl was pretty good.
By the way, and the witty repartee, I can't wait for the banter and the chat stuff that you promo. That's good. I can't wait for that part.
Isn't that what we do?
I think that's part of what we do. Part of what you do, I'm learning as we do more and more of these shows, is that you multitask like a demon, and one of the reasons that you're a successful commissioner has to be that you multitask the best when everything is swirling around you very quickly, because you sat down when the music started to play, and you were still multitasking because you were working something out with Frank Brown, who's always here in the studio, and away we go. As soon as you get pointed at, away you go.
But
that's the way it's supposed to happen. But let me ask you a question.
What was your point?
My point is wondering if you, and you said this before, but you seem to revel in, I won't say turmoil, but in congestion of schedule, multitasking, so many things going on. I mean, is that one of the takeaways for you in this job? Because if it was boring, I could see you kind of just leaving.
Well, to suggest that I revel in it would make me sound rather masochistic. What's my point?
Yeah.
I think it's more a question of this is an environment that I've grown up in professionally. I've been in professional sports now 28 plus a week years, and I'm comfortable with this pacing and this type of stimulation. And if you weren't, you couldn't be doing this, just like you have to be thick-skinned.
Sure.
You know, I know it's funny. I spent Tuesday in Toronto giving a speech and meeting with the media, and sometimes the things that are played back as to what I said and what I meant, you know, never bear reality. And I always think maybe I'm just not clear in what I'm saying, or maybe people just have a view of the world that they have and they're never going to change no matter what anybody says or what the facts are.
Oh, we all have a view. I mean, everybody has a view. Was Tuesday the day that you taped the hour that is going to air tonight? When did you tape that?
On Tuesday.
The man with the longest name for any host in television or radio, George Strombolopoulos. I actually counted the letters. Greg came the closest. Baldinger guessed 17 letters in his last name. What was that like? How was it?
It was fun.
He's a pretty cool guy?
Very cool guy. He's very good at what he does. He gives you a very candid, disarming interview, and he does it without a note. And, you know, he's had some fairly noteworthy people on his show, not including me, but, you know. And I understand he was on NHL Live earlier today.
He was.
So, you know, he's getting around.
And you'll be on with him tonight at 11 o'clock on CBC.
Well, I've already been on with him, but yes, it's being aired tonight.
It's going to air tonight.
That's exactly right.
What kind of interviews... I was going to say, do you like, don't you like? You never seem to be at a loss, and very few people, even if they come at you, can disarm you. Do you remember one interview that was particularly difficult?
Well, difficult wouldn't be the right word, because as you've said, it's rare that I get asked the question I haven't been asked before. But, you know, the most noteworthy and widely viewed interviews were probably a number of years ago when I would do Hockey Night with Ron McLean. who at the time was making no secret of his bias against the league and in favor of the players. And that's something he's actually subsequently admitted on the air. And sometimes I think the discussions got a little more contentious than they had to, in part because he would keep hammering and interrupting until he got the answer, or tried to get the answer he wanted, which he never got, which is what I guess made for entertaining broadcasts. Not necessarily my idea of a good time, but, you know, we do what we have to do. I'm not complaining.
We should point out that's the same Ron McLean that is now a friend of the show because he was on with us last season.
Ron's always been a friend. Sure. Whether or not, you know, I think sometimes people get confused between entertainment and journalism. And I think what he and I were involved in was more entertaining for the viewers than it was hard journalism.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if you're going to be a journalist, there are journalistic standards to which you have to adhere. Speaking of television, let me do a series of our shameful plugs, but also do it in the context of relevant information for our fans.
Let's line up the callers one more time. 877-645-6696. 877-645-6696. We'll get to you as soon as we finish with the... How do you refer to it?
I think I said shameful plug. It's shameless. I'm not ashamed of them, but they are shameless. been a long day. We have a number of really good games. The schedule maker was clairvoyant. Kudos to Steve Hatzipetros. Sunday, 12:30 Eastern on NBC, there's a rematch of the 2008 Stanley Cup Finals, Detroit and Pittsburgh. And the last time those two teams played in Pittsburgh was the night the Red Wings won the Cup. And they also played last November 11th, and the Penguins won 7-6 in overtime. So this should be a pretty exciting matchup. It's on NBC. It's also, I believe, on RDS. Monday, Versus has a pretty good matchup. The Rangers are playing the Devils. And to think about, who would have predicted that in Marty Brodeur's absence, the Devils would be this good and play this offensive? You look speechless.
I am, and listen, to think that Scott Clemenson would even be the guy. I mean, there's a sub story there.
Absolutely.
But the Devils are truly, and you know what? Every year, though, I say to myself the same thing when the season starts. When you look and say, I'm not sure the Devils are going to do much this year. Never discount the Devils. Ever.
Never doubt the Devil. And that game's also on TSN. And on Tuesday, and this one could be a precursor of things to come, and we have the Sharks playing the Bruins. And those two
hey
teams.
Now.
Hey now. And that game's on Versus and TSN at 7 o'clock as well.
Of course, the Joe Thornton subplot still exists there.
You know what? That plot exists, although there was an interesting article. I think it was in Sports Illustrated a couple of weeks ago, making the point that somehow after the trade, even though it didn't look this way, both teams are doing great. And as evidenced by their respective records, they are doing great. And that's a good segue for later on when Peter Chiarelli's on, and he'll talk to us about how well the Bruins are doing, although general managers tend not to talk about how well their teams are doing. This is, by the way, Hockey is for Everyone Month, and we are, as a league, pleased to be supporting a variety of initiatives in conjunction with NHL Diversity. Tonight, Jerome McGinley and the Flames host their Hockey is for Everyone night as they welcome 20 people from the nonprofit organization Immigrant Services Calgary, and there are a whole host of other activities. For example, on Monday night, Willie O'Ree will participate in the ceremonial puck drop prior to the Rangers-Devil game. And the Devils have three diversity players, Bryce Salvador, Kevin Weeks, and Johnny Oduya. And the Rangers lineup includes Nigel Dawes. So we think that'll be a special night. There's a real dogfight, as I think everyone knows, for playoff position in the West. Teams 5 through 11 are within 4 points. I think Anaheim has 57. Dallas and Minnesota, the surging Dallas Stars, 55. Vancouver is 8th in the West with 54. And Edmonton, Columbus, and Phoenix are tied with 53. And Dallas has won
five straight entering into tonight's game against Colorado.
One little expansion of that stat. As of yesterday when I looked at it, there were 10 teams separated by 8 points above and below the line. So the LA Kings are even alive.
Isn't that terrific?
And
that,
you know, I agree. And I listen, for all of the times that I'm one of them that wants to tweak the method with which we hand out points, one for the overtime loss, etc. For all of the different suggestions, we have to be careful not to break something that isn't even close to being broken, because this is perfection the way I look at it, and I think the way most fans would look at it.
You know, in the world, my chaotic world that you talked about, nothing is ever perfection. But what we got going
in an imperfect world
is, no, it's pretty good. It's working well.
It's really good.
It is. What would you like to do next?
Let's let somebody else do the talking.
That sounds good. So why don't we talk to Russ in Columbus? Welcome, Russ. You're on with Bill and Gary, XM 204, Sirius 208.
Good afternoon, Mr. Commissioner.
How are you?
I'm a little bit chilly up here. I'm actually up in Chicago, but I live in Columbus. I'm a big Blue Jackets fan.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. Thank you.
And it's that time of year again, All-Star time, and I'm just curious as to when are my Blue Jackets going to get the All-Star game?
That's a good question, and I think Columbus...
I'll listen off the air.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in. We know Columbus is interested, as are a number of other cities. I'm delighted that there is so much interest in having an All-Star game. We probably owe All-Star games to Columbus, Ottawa, Phoenix, Carolina, and, you know, some other sports move them to neutral sites. Our clubs want them, and they love hosting the events. Montreal was spectacular for us, not just in terms of how we were hosted, the vibe in the city. Being part of the centennial celebration was all good. We know we owe some, and we will get to them. And to make matters a little more difficult in being any more committal is we don't have an All-Star game next year because we go to the Olympics. And in the Olympic year, to try and keep down the wear and tear and the length of the schedule, we decided to sacrifice the All-Star game. It's also one of the things that I think we need to look at again when we do the evaluation of whether or not to continue the Olympics after 2010. Because we give up a lot to go to the Olympics, and the Olympics is great, but it is a balancing act, and as I've repeatedly said, it's a decision that we're going to have to make with the Players Association and hopefully get to the right place. But Columbus is on our radar screen, we know.
Brief description of how the determination is made for how the All-Star game is awarded. Do teams come, make their pitch, make their presentation, make a request to begin with?
No, haven't you seen the big dartboard in my office?
No. That's what all of those marks are on Frank.
Way,
you know that Frank Brown stands too close to the dartboard.
That's what I think some people think. What we do is when we get ready to focus on a year, we then engage with the cities that are interested, and then we start doing an evaluation of hotels, convention center, and their availability. Because sometimes you want to go to a city for a particular date, and it turns out there's either a major convention or some reason that the arena isn't available.
So that's killed some teams.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so it's really a question of timing and working out the logistical details. But it is a major undertaking. We probably have 4,000 or 5,000 guests come in. We have a party. You've been there on Saturday night of All-Star Weekend. You need an intimate facility that can host 5,000 to 7,000 of our closest friends in one place. And you want to do something with the fans in the community, so you need a convention center or you need the ability to construct a major tent-like facility like we did in Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an easy undertaking. This isn't a woe is me. It's just that, you know, we don't make these decisions spur of the moment. Just like, and I'm sure I'll get asked it at some point, just like we haven't focused on the Winter Classic yet. We do them one at a time. And we try to learn off of what we've just done to make the next one even better. And talking about things even better, why don't we go to our next caller, who's Pogi in Los Angeles. You're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204 and Sirius 208.
Hi, guys. A little background. I know Mr. Gordie Howe is Mr. Hockey, and I'm known as Mr. NHL around here. I got about 100 jerseys, NHL jerseys, and try to watch about 40, 50 games a week, you know, parts of it.
That's great.
Wow.
Well, thanks. I'm glad you called in.
Yeah.
What's your favorite sweater?
I like the old Chicago Blackhawks one, just a big hawk on it. Though I'm a Kings fan, I like the old Chicago.
Do you wear your Blackhawks jersey when you go to the Staples Center?
Well, I wear every jersey. I figure if I root for the other team, since the Kings, when I root for them, lose. If I root for the other team, maybe we'll win.
Okay. I get that. Yeah. How's that been working out for you?
Pretty good. I'm wearing the Bogosian jersey to the game against the Atlanta Thrashers. So we'll see how it goes.
Good luck.
Question about refereeing. As I said, I watched several games a week, and I don't know if you guys caught yesterday's game with the Red Wings and Coyotes. Tie game 4-4, last minute of play. Marian Hossa goes in front of one of the Coyotes players and throws his arms, and like someone had shot him, falls down. The guy didn't even touch him, and Detroit scores a goal and wins. Is there any discussion of having some kind of review where it decides the outcome of the game so late in the game? Because, I mean, if Pittsburgh misses the playoffs by a point, that would be a stinking way.
I didn't see it. I was out last night, so I wasn't watching the game. Even though
you were on the game,
I did the first intermission on an interview, but that was a static photo of me talking on the telephone. But the fact of the matter is, replay is very difficult to do and get right. Our game is too fast. There's too much going on. Camera angles will give you a different view than necessarily the official had on the ice. I think what we do with replay in terms of reviewing goals and their validity is something that works extremely well, and I think it's been actually the model for the other sports who have begun to introduce replay. But I don't think you can be stopping a game that has nonstop action and be looking at reviewing penalty after penalty or call or non-call after non-call. It would be impossible to make the right call. And what's ironic about the last caller is – we used to get criticized because refs put the whistle away. My guess is, you know, if we tell them not to guess, and since I didn't see it, I can't tell if it was a good or a bad call. But our officials overwhelmingly get it right. Now, they're not perfect, but overwhelmingly they get the calls and the non-calls right.
So easy, though, for them to get it wrong when minimal contact is called. And that's my only point. And here's when you and I have had this discussion, the good players have gotten so good at simulating. And after minimal contact, reaction to that contact can throw a ref off.
Except minimal contact's a funny term, and I think it's a little misleading. If you've got your stick horizontal to somebody trying to skate by you, and you just tug them slightly, it may be minimal contact, but you may have cost them a stride, cost them completing a pass and getting a scoring chance. And frankly, if your stick is horizontal or your free hand is out and it shouldn't be, you may put yourself at risk for being the subject of a bad call.
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't do that.
I get that part, too.
I know you do.
I like the game the way it is, believe me. And we've had this discussion over the years as well. I got if we don't change anything, I'm okay with that, and I'm okay with stepping out, which we will do when we come back. I think Peter Chiarelli's going to be with us, correct?
That's what they tell me.
The GM of the Boston Bruins will be back on the NHL Hour after this.
Hi, this is Ryan Miller of the Buffalo Sabres, and you're listening to the NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Radio. Now back to Commissioner Bettman.
Welcome back, everybody. That song selection was by Bill Clement. Who is that?
You gave me the get it out sign. Thumbs down. That's "Don't Take Me Alive" by Steely Dan.
Oh, okay.
It's a great song.
It's a long introduction. Actually, I like Steely Dan.
Okay.
Speaking of things I like, and that's talking to our general managers. Joining us on the line from the Boston Bruins is Peter Chiarelli. Peter, how are you?
I'm good, Gary. Hi, Bill. I actually caught part of the song selection process, and I thought it was going to be Derek and the Dominoes, which I would have fully endorsed.
That was my selection. But, you know, they don't give me full musical carte blanche here.
No, wait, Peter. I don't get much of a voice in this. So Gary wasn't here. I pick one song. You know what? I'm never doing that again.
By the way, that's a good idea. Hey, Peter, tell people a little bit about your background and how you wound up as the general manager of the Bruins. I mean, we all know you played at Harvard for a couple of years. You went on to be a lawyer. But take us through the evolution of your hockey career.
Well, I played 4 years at Harvard. I played junior hockey in Ottawa. Mm-hmm. And I played with one of the guys I work with, Donnie Sweeney. From there, I played parts of a year over in Europe and then went to law school at Ottawa University. And then I became an agent for a bit while practicing law. And then I became an agent full time. And up until 99, and then I started working with the Senators in both the legal capacity and the hockey capacity, and then I became assistant GM there. So from there, the Bruins were looking for a general manager, and I interviewed along with some other candidates, and I got the job in late spring, early summer of 06.
And since 06, I think it's fair to say the Bruins have had quite a turnaround. Last year, all season, the Bruins had 94 points. I think you now have 82 through 52 games. Talk about the transformation of this team.
Well, like last year, I thought, Gary, we went through a lot of adversity with injuries with Patrice Bergeron, and we had injuries to Glenn Murray and to Mark Savard at the end. While we shored up our defensive side of the game last year, that adversity at the end and the way we gutted it out in the kind of the run for the playoffs, and I thought was an admirable playoff round. You never like to lose once you're there, but I thought we played well. It allowed our chemistry to really come together, and it battle tested our younger guys. So we made a couple of tweaks over the summer system wise. I'm not saying that you can attribute all of those moves to the success we're having, but we activated our defense a little more, and we a little more aggressive on the forecheck, got a little more aggressive on the penalty kill, and I got to give credit to Claude for implementing that stuff. And the rest of the group has improved too. So we've really taken a big step. We're admittedly ahead of our plan, but I'll take it while we're there.
We're talking to Peter Chiarelli of the Boston Bruins. It sounds to me like you think this team is still not in full stride, and can you get better yet?
I think we can. I'm not greedy. I know we're doing very well, and you know, at the end of the day, for our market, it's going to be in the playoffs how we do. So I like the way we're progressing, and we're playing very well, and we're playing very well defensively, and it's comfortable to us now defensively, and it allows our offense to flourish a bit. We had a really good defensive game last night, and we turned it on when we had to, and that bodes well for the playoffs, because if we can continue to play that way at will.
Peter, without giving away any trade secrets, what goes through your mind when your team is doing as well as yours is from a point standpoint as you start focusing on the trading deadline?
Well, certainly you look to certain windows, Gary, that you think that you have an opportunity to go for it, and we just finished our pro scouting meetings, and what dominated those meetings was what player could we look to add, what players could we look to add to get us over the hump in a long playoff run. So you have to look to that, and because the success we're having, and as I said, we're ahead of plan. We still don't want to stray too far from the plan, because we want to. Whenever you have to add a player, you're going to have to give up a good young player at some point down the line, whether it's a pick or a existing player or a prospect. So that youth is energized, so you have to be careful. We don't want to give up any of that stuff. At the same time, we're doing well, and Mr. Jacobs likes a winner. So we have to look that we have to look to the future, and the future maybe now.
Speaking of Mr. Jacobs, I think his public image has him terribly misunderstood. Would you talk about his passion for the game and your relationship with him?
Oh, he's really misunderstood. And I mean, you can I think in Boston especially, but he's, you know, I talk to him about every day, about our team, about, you know, he knows the game very well. He wants to win. He wants to do anything to win. He's surprisingly, and I know he's been in the business for a long time, he's quite astute at the, you know, the machinations of day-to-day stuff and the team and how, when I say that, I mean like how the pulse of the team, he has a pretty good feel for that. He's been a great owner for me. I went through as a GM with some bumps along the way to start, and he's been understanding. But the bottom line is he's so competitive and he wants to win, and he's really passionate about the game, but very passionate about the Bruins.
And talk about Cam Neely's role with the club.
Cam has been—he's been really good. We brought him on board in an advisory capacity last year. Was it last? Yeah, it was last year. And he's done a lot of things. Like he'll help out with the younger players. We've got some young big forwards. He'll help out on the ice in conjunction with the coaching staff. He'll help. He's part of our group when we make decisions on player personnel. He's got a real good sense for the game, but he recognizes that he doesn't have that kind of the player personnel experience. But he's got a real keen eye, and I'm good friends with Steve Yzerman. We grew up in the Ottawa area, and I know him and his family. He's a very similar to Steve in that he's humble, but he's blunt in his assessments, and he knows the game. So he's been really helpful to our group, and he's been helpful for the franchise because he stands for what we want to try and bring the franchise back to.
Not to look too far ahead, but you have a game coming up in a couple of three games against San Jose. Based on your respective records, is that a game you view any differently or you think the club will prepare for any differently?
Well, the last few games we've had have been against real big teams who are really solid contenders, and that includes Washington, includes New Jersey. I want to include the Rangers and even last night Philly. Like, they're big teams. And they're teams that, you know, we know we have to do well against. San Jose may be, you know, just from that perspective, may be the most challenging. The record speaks for itself, but they're a big, strong team, kind of a big, low-cycle team. They control the puck, they possess the puck, and they got tremendous defense. So it's going to be a real test. And I know the guys are looking to it, but they're not looking too far ahead, but you know, in this stretch, we looked at this stretch from afar and said, "This is going to be a real test for us," and that'll be a heck of a game.
Joe Thornton coming back to Boston change any of the factors or the emotion of the game?
Well, I'm sure it will to the fan, and that I really haven't been part of that, but I think he still communicates with some of the players. There's been quite a turnaround in personnel since Joe left, but he's that big centerman, big guy that they have a lot of on San Jose, and I'm sure that'll be played up in the paper though.
I know you have to go because you have another interview, and we appreciate you being with us. One last question: have you gotten over your alma mater's lost Harvard on Monday night to BU in the Beanpot?
Well, I was watching it with Donnie Sweeney, and they actually played pretty well. I don't know if you saw it. There was a goal that they didn't allow, and it was the right call at the end that would have tied it up. But they played well. They've had a bit of a rough season this year, but Teddy Donato's doing a good job, and they're getting some good recruits next year. And the BU team is a pretty good team, so we'll see what happens on Monday.
Well, Peter, thanks for being with us, and good luck the rest of the way.
All right. Thanks, Gary. Thanks, Bill.
All right, Peter. Thanks very much. I'm looking into my crystal ball, and I see Zdeno Chara and Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau on the ice at the same time, over and over and over again in that game. That's going to be a heck of a matchup because San Jose is big and strong. Boston's got the biggest, strongest guy in the whole league in Zdeno Chara. We're going to step out. We've got a couple more slots on the board. We'd love you to line up. We'll get to the callers that have been patiently holding. 877-645-6696, 877-645-6696. We'll get back to your calls right after this.
Hi, this is Vinny LeCavalier of Tampa Bay Lightning, and you're listening to the NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Radio. Now back to Commissioner Bettman.
Welcome back, everyone. I think, Bill, we're going to go right to the callers, some of whom have been very patient. Keith in Toronto has been holding on for almost a half hour. Keith, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM 204 and Sirius 208.
Yes, good afternoon, Bill and Gary.
How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Sounds like you're driving.
Yeah, I am. I'm on my way home from work. My question is, with a recent death in the senior A hockey level here in Toronto, a guy was fighting, helmet came off, hit the ground, and unfortunately he passed away. And there's been a lot of talk about fighting as it pertains to all levels of hockey. And I know there's been some discussion, I guess, at the NHL level. My question is, has there ever been any discussion about removing some of the video and music that goes along with fighting during an NHL game? And I guess what I mean is, I was at the Bell Center twice this weekend for two games, and during the Boston game there was a fight, and during or just slightly after, they busted into the Rocky music and they had some fighting video up on the scoreboard. That sort of gets everybody in a bit of a frenzy, you know, after a fight ends. And I'm wondering if there's ever been any talk of trying to eliminate that stuff.
It's a fair question. Before I make an educated guess as to the answer and why, obviously Don Sanderson's death was a terrible, terrible tragedy, and it has caused lots of people to focus on the fighting issue. My own view is, as I've been repeating it, is I think overwhelmingly people associated with the game, either working in the game, playing the game, or fans of the game, on balance, understand and appreciate and accept the role, as limited as it is, that fighting has in the game. Having said that, we will have a good discussion using the league's processes that we have. The general managers will discuss it at their March meeting, and the competition committee ultimately will discuss it in June, because you can't just have a quick reflex reaction when something happens. You've really got to go through a careful, thoughtful analysis before reaching any conclusions, and we'll have the discussion about the role of fighting in the game. I also think, perhaps more significantly, we will have a discussion and see what changes, if any, we can make in terms of how fighting occurs. If helmets come off, should fights be stopped? What's the role of the takedown in the course of a fight? Interestingly enough, in the league that Don Sanderson played in, they had prohibition against fighting, ejection and suspension, but that didn't stop a tragic accident from happening. But this is something we're going to look at. Now, to the question about the music and the video, that's obviously intended to be entertaining for the fans in the arena. And my guess is, and Bill, you can answer this better than me, the players probably at the time aren't even aware of what's going on around them other than what's absolutely taking place on the ice.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the fans are certainly tuned into what's going on, but I don't think it has much of an effect on the players. And listen, and it is part of the game, therefore it is part of what is replayed up in the big jumbotrons and the big screens. But yeah, I mean, when a player is fighting, you got way more things to worry about than what you see. Players very often sitting there looking up and seeing what is happening. And guys do want to post mortem and do a little review of what has happened so they look. But as far as it having an effect on any of the players, I would say minimal, if any.
If any. And the players who are watching from the bench are on the bench because a long time ago we got rid of bench-clearing brawls. So it is an area of the game that has been modified and regulated over time.
And can I tell you that when the bench is emptied, because that was my era, there weren't quite enough refs to go around.
Well, and actually we had a fewer official on, one fewer than we did now. Actually, four against 10 isn't enough anyway.
They were scary.
Assuming the goaltenders stay in the crease.
Right.
Let's go to Wallace in Philadelphia. Maybe this is a call for you, Bill. Wallace, you're on with Bill and Gary, and this is XM 204, Sirius 208.
Hello, gentlemen.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Great show.
Thank you.
This is sort of a follow-up to the previous caller in regards to fighting, and I may be paraphrasing, but the NHLPA had came out and, you know, was talking about fighting and reviewing that situation. Now, in my experience in watching games, there seems to be that one time where some players are running around, and then there could be a marginal call, maybe a little after the whistle, where there's a scrum, Do you see that as maybe officiating a way to maybe quell some things leading up to fighting or sticks coming up, things that can escalate from that point? Or do you see those as separate issues?
Well, they're related, but not as related as you think. Occasionally, a scrum or a series of scrums can escalate into a fight, but we also have lots of fights that happen in the absence of a scrum. The officials are pretty good at calling what we ask them to call, and that's why we're going to thoroughly revisit exactly how fights get conducted. I think the term I used a week or so ago was the rules of engagement, and whether or not we need to be more aggressive in policing scrums, although I don't think that's really what the debate's all about. I really think it's about how fights actually start and what happens in the course of a fight that could be dangerous or something that we could do to be safer. I understand that Paul Kelly was quoted something about maybe there's interest in a helmet rule or something. I assume he's doing that in the context of us, meaning the league and the players, going through the processes that are in place to make sure that whatever we do, if anything, is on the basis of a carefully self-analytical, reflective discussion that really gets in depth in terms of how we review this part of the game.
Paul Kelly was quoted as saying that the vast majority of players are not in favor of abolishing fighting and taking it out of the game, that they think it has a place. I think he's after the same thing that everybody's after, and that is the ultimate safety of the players, which is an oxymoron because in a fight you're trying to hurt your opponent. That said, it's how far do you let it go and just what type of injury or damage are you willing to tolerate? That's what it's about.
Although, interestingly enough, do you think in the fight you're trying to injure your opponent or you're trying to win the fight?
And that are not mutually exclusive, are they?
Well, but is what's the intent? In other words, you're making a statement and you're looking to win the fight to make the statement. I'm not sure you're necessarily trying to hurt somebody. You're trying to beat them in the fight, but I'm not sure you're looking to injure them.
Well,
But the things that we're talking about, the two most recent incidents, including the AHL game where the player whose name's escaping me went into seizures, were accidents.
Garrett Klotz.
Right. Accidents incidental to the fight itself. I don't think any of the fighters in those situations were looking to injure the player and have the consequential results that were seen.
No, agreed.
But that's why we have to look at this very carefully. Why don't we go to Tony in Ontario? He's been holding for more than a half hour. We appreciate that, Tony. You're on with Bill and Gary, XM 204, Sirius 208.
Good afternoon, Mr. Bettman. How are you?
Good. You can call me Gary, though.
Okay, Gary. Gary, just a quick comment, and I don't mean to rehash anything about this Sean Avery stuff, but in listening to you speak, I mean, you had to come down with some kind of a decision. With Sean's antics, with comments made about other players' fiancés or girlfriends or whatever have you, I realize that you do have to comment or you do have to preserve the integrity of the league and come down with something. But something, I just recently viewed a movie by Mike Myers here in Toronto, filmed, I guess, in part at the ACC. And it showed two of our storied franchises, LA Kings, Toronto Maple Leafs. And to be quite honest, it had parts in it that was complete vulgarity. I mean, what's the difference between what Sean Avery's done and what the NHL has endorsed in allowing these movies to go ahead?
Actually, I think the movie you're referring to is The Love Guru. And I think ultimately, while I'm a big fan of Mike Myers, the public spoke and the movie wasn't warmly received. The fact is that was fiction, that was a parody, that was entertainment. What Sean Avery did and has done was direct comments that are inappropriate and not reflective of what NHL players do, specifically to certain people. And I think it crossed the line in a way that Mike Myers' movie didn't. You might not be a fan of Mike Myers. You might not find the movie funny, but everybody knew it was a parody in a movie. What Sean Avery did and what all players do, and overwhelmingly I'm proud of what all players do, is represent our game and the other 700 players who play our game night in and night out and don't conduct themselves like that. But that's a fair question. Why don't we go to Ron in Cincinnati? You're on with Bill and Gary. This is
XM. How you doing, Bill and Gary?
We're good.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I got three quick questions. It won't take long. The first question, have you ever thought about going to the five-player shootout?
We've had a discussion about that. There was lots of discussion when we first implemented it as to whether or not we should do three or five. We think the three's working pretty good. If for some reason we thought there was a need to change, that would be the next logical step. But we like what we've got right now.
Okay, and the second question, this show is a great show. Have you ever thought about putting on the NHL Network?
Well, we've had those discussions. In fact, I was on last week with the guys from NHL Live marveling that we were on the NHL Network and saying, how come we don't do it? I assume it's been because I'm not as photogenic as the guys who do NHL Live, but Greg Baldinger is working on it. I think the network is contemplating doing the simulcast.
And the third question is, I got the center ice package, and I got DirecTV. Over the last couple of games on MSG, on DirecTV, they got a MSG high def, but they, for some reason the Ranger games and the Islander and Devil games are getting blacked out, and I got the package. I don't know why they're getting blacked out on high def now.
It may be that they're not being put on in high def. They're not necessarily, MSG is not necessarily making the high def feed available for DirecTV's. And it's a question of what feeds we get provided for. We're trying to get all HD feeds, and that's something we've got to work out with the regional sports channels that provide the feeds.
Okay, thanks a lot, fellas.
Thanks for calling in. Why don't we go to...
Two words.
What?
Makeup.
Makeup?
That's all anybody needs. It's not about being photogenic. It's just about makeup.
Are you back to that other question? I was only kidding.
That was a lame joke. I'm kidding, too. Okay. We don't do. The guys don't do makeup. Nobody does makeup in the studio. The NHL Network does not do makeup.
Actually, if you're on TV under your union contract, don't we have to pay you more?
I'm not under a union contract.
Oh, okay.
But if you'd like to, Baldinger's waving his arms
it's not
wildly
in the budget.
Here.
Okay.
No, but if you have one, I'd love to sign it.
Well, that's between you and Greg.
Okay.
You know. Listen, you can make what I make if you want off of this gig.
On second thought.
But there we go.
On further review.
On second thought, let's talk to Jim in Bayside. You're on with Bill and Gary, XM Sirius 204-208.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
How are you?
Good. Longtime Bruins fan since the late 60s. I just had a question about the...
Before you ask the question, are you enjoying yourself this year?
This is great. We've been waiting a lot of years for this. Expectations will be high when the playoffs start.
You have a little bit of that Boston accent. What are you doing in Bayside?
My wife is originally from New York,
uh-huh.
And I still haven't lost my accent after 25 years now.
Well, keep it. It's great.
Thank you. My question is about last Sunday's game, Boston at Montreal. Right after the empty net goal, which pretty much decided the game, Ryan O'Byrne ran Chuck Kobezu from behind into the boards face first. My question is twofold. Number one, did the Bruins ask the league to review that? And number two, is there going to be any kind of disciplinary action? I'll hang up for your answer.
The clubs are strongly encouraged not to ask us to review because we're watching every game as it's being played. And when hockey operations, namely Coley, Campbell, Mike Murphy, and the guys that work for them, think there's something wrong, they act on it on its own. I'm drawing a blank on the play you're referring to.
I wish I could help, too. I didn't see it.
And since I'm not aware of any emails that crossed my desk that there was a hearing, my guess is there was no supplemental discipline. It is possible that it was worthy of a penalty. Things that happen on the ice that are not appropriate, that deserve penalties, don't all deserve suspensions. And if Kobezu wasn't injured, if the act was deemed to be, yes, a penalty, but not particularly egregious, then they wouldn't be dealing with supplemental discipline or a suspension. I'll have to ask Coley. I'll have to go back and take a look at it.
What's a guy named O'Byrne doing playing for Montreal and not Boston anyway?
That's a profound question, which probably has its genesis in the draft, free agency, and a whole host of other things.
But before you came on board years ago, Montreal used to get the first two French Canadians.
Right.
The Bruins should be allowed to get the first two guys with Irish names on their team in the draft.
What do you think that will do for teams in Carolina and Nashville?
It'll cripple them. They'll be out of business in 4 years.
Well, don't, you know what? Don't,
but we got to protect the Irish heritage. My mother's Irish.
Don't say that. It'll result in some crazy headline.
It's not that simple.
I understand.
By the way, and I was glad to hear you set the record straight last night about what's going on in Phoenix for the fans.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny because we were asked, would I be available to do an interview on the regional back to Phoenix? And all of a sudden, the regional issues a press release that I'm somehow getting on to do a State of the Phoenix Coyotes speech or something. And that was news to me. You know, people sometimes say, well, are you on a tour? Why are you making all these PR appearances? I go where I'm asked to go. If people want to talk to me, I talk to them. But I was happy to talk to Darren Pang and Dave Strader and answer their questions. Yep. Because there has been a lot of sensationalism in the coverage of what's going on in Phoenix, and that's unfortunate, most importantly because it's unfair to the fans. And on that note, let's talk to our next fan, Ed in New Mexico. You're on with Bill and Gary.
Hi, Gary. This is Ed Beebe in New Mexico, yes. Fellow Cornell alumni.
Oh, what year were you?
70. Well, you're after Dryden graduated.
You're a little older than me. I got there in 70.
Yes, right.
So we just missed each other.
Well, I got to see two national champions.
Yes, you did. You had the undefeated season. You know, the interesting thing is most people think that Ken Dryden was the goaltender for the undefeated season. And the goaltender was?
A freshman goalie, and I don't remember his name anymore.
Brian Cropper.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think he ever got a cup of coffee in the NHL.
That doesn't mean he wasn't a good college player.
Not at all.
Anyway, what can we do for you?
Well, my question is kind of a follow-up to the chap in Cincinnati relating to MSG HD broadcasts on center ice. From October until January 21st, all of the MSG HD broadcasts were, in fact, carried on center ice via DirecTV and other providers. They were suddenly cut off at that point, apparently a fairly conscious effort on someone's part. The question is, if this is a contract dispute of some type, are we looking at a short-term solution, or are all of the center ice customers that live outside the metro and rely on center ice for HD out of luck?
Well, my belief is long-term, you won't be out of luck. Because whatever issues we're having in terms of the delivery of feeds or making them available, those are things that can be adjusted and resolved over time. We, with the clubs and the regionals, have a variety of things that we do for each other and we provide for each other. And ultimately, if there is an HD feed available, it's deliverable. And if DirecTV has capacity, it should be carried. This is something we're going to have to look into. Because this is the first that I've been aware that it's an issue. When I get my feeds at home, I get the benefit of I get the national feeds, both U.S. and Canada, and I get the local feeds. So it wouldn't have registered for me watching at home that not everything was in HD. My ultimate goal, and goes without saying, both locally and nationally, we'd like all of our games in HD and all HD feeds available to everybody who's watching the game. Because HD for hockey is nothing short of terrific.
That will happen, will it not?
Over
time. It's just a matter of when.
It's a question of capacity, logistics, working the bugs out of it. But if we're a couple of years out, ultimately I think everybody's going to be in HD and people are going to wonder what conventional television was ever like and how. It'll be like when my kids say, how did you ever watch TV in black and white?
Right. Or what's an LP?
That's what's in a vinyl disc. You know, the only disc they know are those little things.
Right.
Why don't we go to the next caller? Andy in Minneapolis. You're on with Bill and Gary, XM 204, Sirius 208.
Bill and Gary, how are you?
We're good. Yeah.
Good to talk to you. I enjoyed the interview with Mrs. Shirelli, so I appreciate that. I appreciate everything you're doing for the fans here.
Thank you very much.
My general question. I actually had to do with the Winter Classic. You know, that they were obviously outstanding success. I was actually wondering, you know, what kind of plans you have for next year, obviously, with the Olympics and everything. It's going to be a little tough schedule-wise. But do you have plans on having a Winter Classic in 2009, 2010? And then secondly, you know, there's... Actually, somebody else that I was talking to made a good point that, you know, in the month of February, you have football ending, and really all that's out there is NHL and NBA, and I was wondering if there's any talk about the Winter Classic, you know, possibly going to February, where there's really not that much going on sports-wise, so we can get maybe a bigger audience for the NHL. I'll hang up and listen to your answer. Thank
well, first of all, thanks for calling in, and both good questions. We're planning on having an outdoor game next season. The scheduling isn't that much of an issue for us because we do plan on playing on January 1st. Obviously, the Olympics, it means we won't have an All-Star game, which I think makes it all the more important that we have a big event like the Winter Classic. Beyond the fact that we want to do it and we're going to begin to look at the possibilities, we haven't done anything. We had 80 people on staff in Chicago managing and working the Winter Classic. We finished up there, cleaned up there, brought everybody home for 24 hours to debrief, and then we shipped them all off to Montreal to do the All-Star game. So,
how'd they enjoy their day off?
it was probably a blur because they all slept through it, but we are probably next week going to start the debriefing process. We do this on all our big events to see what went right, what we could do better, what went wrong, if anything. And so we'll start that process in the next week or so. There are lots and lots of cities and teams that are interested, and my guess is over the next 2-3 months we'll get to a point where we're comfortable in announcing where the next Winter Classic will be. In terms of moving it to February, there has been some school of thought that says, you know, maybe February after football's over and it's just us and that other sport would be okay. The flip side is we seem to have found, with NBC's help, a very special place. If I'm not mistaken, the day that is the third most viewed on television in the calendar year is New Year's Day. Beyond, I think the league championships games and the Super Bowl are the two most viewed days, and New Year's Day is third. It used to be devoted to college football, but we seem to have ignited the day and seem to be getting the lion's share of attention. So it seems to be a pretty good day for us, although there is some interest on some, but I don't see it happening anytime soon for us to move off of New Year's Day. I was just handed a note to keep the record straight. Brian Cropper, Cornell goaltender, the undefeated season, played for the Port Huron Wings in the IHL and then the Tidewater Wings in the AHL, never in the NHL. I knew he never played in the NHL, but most people think it was Ken Dryden who did the undefeated season at Cornell.
So we got a minute to go. Ken Dryden played in the minors his first year in the National Hockey League, and I played against him, and then he got called up, and I scored 5 goals on him, and I'm not a scorer, and I said, this string bean is never going to make it in the NHL. That happens to be the year he got called up and won the Smythe, so that told you where my eye was, how quality my eye was, you know, for being a scout. Well,
How many times did you have 5 goals on anyone?
Well, that was in one weekend, not in one game. I had it in one weekend. No, that was the only time, but I knew he couldn't play. I knew Dryden would never make it.
So the world got turned on its head. He underperformed for you, and you overperformed for him.
I look back at that weekend very fondly. As I'm going to look ahead to next week's show, Thursday at 4 p.m., we'll be back, and we will have Ed Snyder, owner of the Philadelphia Flyers, with us, so you'll want to join us for that. Coming up next, Phil Esposito, Mike Ross are in the slot. Thanks for being part of the show. We look forward to your calls next week. Enjoy your hockey, folks. The games only get bigger from here on out.
For more podcasts, check out NHL.com. This is NHL Radio.